You are Locked On Knicks, your daily podcast on the New York Knicks. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Shot blocked. Porzingis with his fourth projection. Courtney Lee for three. Beasley lines up. Ntilikina.
What he does is contagious. He comes in, touches.
And across the lane. Baker launches. Jack to Porzingis. Fires up the ball.
Welcome, everybody, to Locked On Knicks, the podcast that's in the 99th percentile of explaining, complaining, and entertaining. I'm your host, James Marcina, a.k.a. Lenny Bruce Beck. You may know me as NBA Injury Report on Twitter, and this is episode 339. God damn, that's a lot of episodes. On today's episode, I'm joined by the wonderful Drew Steele of Posting and Toasting in many other places. He lives in Boston currently, which is a disgrace, but we love him just the same. He is here to talk about the Kyrie Irving rumors that are all over the place. You guys know what I'm talking about. We're going to talk about it. What does it mean? We're going to talk about an ESPN roundtable about who they would put in the Hall of Fame who's not in there currently. Stephon Marbury showed up on that list. We're going to give you our takes. We're going to talk about Kanter possibly adding a three-point shot to his game and what that might mean for him and the Knicks going forward. Drew is going to share a take about how Phil Jackson actually saved the Knicks. And then we're going to close out the episode by discussing Locked On Knicks guests and how many episodes they've each appeared on. This has been a point of contention amongst our guests. They're very competitive. You know, they like sports. They like competition. They want to be at the top. So Drew actually dug into the data, or the data, however you want to pronounce it, and figured out who's been on the most and how frequently they've been on. Very exciting stuff. This was a great sode. I loved it. I think you guys are going to love it. Quick reminder before we start, we have a hotline, 929-377-5103. Call it, rant, rave, ask me questions. We will get it in a voicemail bag sode. They're very fun. I look forward to doing them every week. Call that number, 929-377-5103. All right, let's start the sode. Hit it, Marv.
Yes.
So we got to talk about the big rumor of the day, the Kyrie Irving stuff. Celtics reporter A. Sherrod Blakely went on a podcast, and he said that Kyrie Irving is the Knicks' top choice in free agency. Here's the direct quote, in case you guys have not read this or heard this yet. Here it is. I can tell you right now, the New York Knicks, he is their number one target. I've spoken with people within the organization. They have made it absolutely crystal clear to me that if they had their pick of guys that are going to be in the free agent market next summer, Kyrie would be their first, second, third, and fourth choice. He is a guy they definitely want. He also said that the interest for now, anyways, is coming more from the Knicks than from the Kyrie camp. So, first question, do we believe this guy? How does he get the scoop that all Knicks beat writers have been trying to get? It's not really the scoop. It's pretty much a rehash of the same thing we've heard a million different times, but what do you think about this report and its veracity, Drew?
By inside the Knicks organization, do you mean speaking with myself and Sweeney about wanting Kyrie Irving? I mean, who did he talk to? I mean, yeah. I don't even think our man Ian Begley, friend of the show, has that sort of access to get information. I mean, I feel like he's just kind of stating the obvious. Like,
yeah.
Isn't that, that's been the rumor that the Knicks want Kyrie since, you know, even when he was, you know, potentially like trading for him for the Cavaliers. So I feel like he's just kind of stating the obvious.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw this break, if you can call this breaking, I was like, oh, A. Sherrod Blakely, I feel like I've heard that name before. Who is he? Is he a tabloid muckraker? Is he a shit stirrer? And I reached out to John Corrales, host of Locked On Celtics, who knows what he's talking about. This guy's a Celtics reporter. And he said, nah, he's a beat reporter. You can trust what he says. So I believe that it came from somewhere in the Knicks organization. But like you said, did this come from Perry? Did this come from Mills? Highly doubt it. Did the Knicks you know, tell him, yeah, we like Kyrie Irving, we'd love to sign him. Yeah, I'd buy that. Did they say he's our first, second, third, and fourth choice? I don't know about that. This guy, A. Sherrod Blakely, like anyone else, is prone to slightly exaggerate things. Humans love a good story. It's like, oh, I got this nugget. He's also trying to make a name for himself. I'm not saying he's fabricating things, but, you know, did they say this exact thing in this exact way? Who knows? Do they probably like Kyrie Irving? Yes, I'm guessing they do. Which brings up the next question. If you're wondering what to make of this, who benefits the most from this leak? Anytime there's a leak, I like to ask myself this. I think it's a good way of figuring out what exactly is going on. If anything, who do you think benefits from this, Drew?
That's a good question, because I'm more of like, no one benefits. But if I have to lean towards one way, it would maybe be Kyrie. Because I just kind of look at it and I say, you look kind of like you said, who benefits? And it's like, well, Kyrie maybe, because he can like leverage that against, you know, the Knicks for like signing with another team for more money. But he's going to get a max contract unless he, you know, blows out his Achilles or something along those lines.
Yeah, so, I completely agree.
So I don't know in that case, like if it's going to be like a money play. Like other than that, I mean, no one, like I said, just not really anyone. The Knicks definitely don't benefit, because it's like they're just going to pigeonhole themselves for Kyrie and miss out on other potential free agents or trades or something.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing. That's it.
Yeah, that's my read on it, too. I mean, if you're the Knicks, you don't want to telegraph your intentions unless, I guess, like, you think that a big thing for Kyrie is he wants to be desperately thirsted after. It's like they have some psychological profile on him. He wants to be lusted after in the news for a year and a half, then okay, sure, maybe that benefits the Knicks, but probably not. And the Knicks seem pretty sharp right now, knock on wood. Furiously knock on wood. So I don't think they would just randomly... Is this like a big deal? Someone on Twitter was like, guys, this doesn't matter. And of course it doesn't, but we're a Knicks podcast, so we're talking about, we're having fun here, we're shooting the shit. It's not a big deal, but I don't love the idea if like Scott Perry called this guy and was like, yo, we need Kyrie. He's our first through ninth options. Like, that would be not good, right? For the sake of conversation. So, I don't think this benefits the Knicks. If anyone, maybe it benefits Kyrie a little bit. Maybe it benefits this reporter a little bit. Gets his name out there. You know, like, because it's like, all right, he's their first, second, third, fourth. What about Durant? Would they not want Durant? Of course they would, if he showed any interest in the Knicks. So, you know, it's kind of a big nothing, in my opinion. Of course the Knicks want him. But I'm curious what you think, Drew. Should he be the Knicks' first, second, third, and fourth option in this next free agency?
Period. Well, there's the rational side of me, and then there's the fan in me, and the fan meaning Kyrie fan. So That person's like, yes, first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, bring him on. I want him in. I want him breaking ankles. I want him taking big shots and winning championships like he does on the regular. Well, not the regular. He won one. But you know what I'm saying. Like, yes. That's who I want. I want him on the team. But the rational side, not really. I mean, if Durant is actually a plausible option, which, again, we more than likely know. But if he is,
right,
I take Durant over Kyrie. You know, practical side. For me, it's like there's only one person who I take above Kyrie, and it's LeBron. Like, that's irrational me. Practical me is like, yes, there's actually better players.
You love Kyrie, huh?
Yeah, there's like five guys who I love more than anything else, like irrationally. So it's like, it's Kyrie Irving.
Okay.
It's Kemba Walker. It's Steph Curry. It's Joe Ingles and David Nwaba.
Quite the offseason for you coming up with Kemba and Kyrie both being free agents.
Oh, man. I'm not going to be able to handle those guys. I just love watching them play. Just bring them all on. I'll take them both.
What would be a good salary for the Knicks to sign Kemba at, in your opinion, as a huge Kemba stan? Do you want to max him? Would you be comfortable maxing Kemba Walker, Drew? How seriously can we take you?
Okay, so I'm someone who's all for the players making as much money as possible.
Yeah.
So max him. But if you're a team, you can't max Kemba Walker. That's just, you know.
Good. Okay.
That's poor management. So for me, I was like, throw him a 40% max, give him as much money as possible, but that'd be not a smart decision. That's just not a smart decision, though, by a team.
My answer to this question is, should Kyrie be the one through whatever option? Kyrie is an excellent player. And if he's healthy, you know, I spent a lot of time talking about this on another pod. He's had a bunch of injuries, but not any one of them necessarily has to be one where you're like, oh my God, got to stay away from this guy. The, you know, superstitious Italian-American in me who doesn't want, you know, a cat looking at Christopher Moltisanti's portrait hanging inside the bada bing. So, I had to get that. It's been almost 10 minutes and I haven't made a Sopranos reference yet. I'm scared of his injury, but the rational part of me is like, yes, he's good. There is a gut feeling in me that just doesn't like this whole Kyrie Jimmy Butler thing. I mean, look, it's extremely possible that if the Knicks somehow got Kyrie Irving and Jimmy Butler by the time next year rolls around, they'll be a great team, right? Like, I recognize this. That makes it extremely likely that the Knicks will be excellent. But just the circumstance, and maybe this is baggage of years of being a Knicks fan and pushing in the chips too soon, pushing in the chips when you don't even have any chips, and being like, take my mortgage, break my legs after I can't pay you. More like kind of oblique Sopranos references there. But it just feels soon to me. I don't know. Maybe I'm just not, you know, maybe I'm just scared of the new thing. But when you talk about, like, what you have to do to trade to get a Jimmy Butler, you're talking about draft picks and stuff, and we're stretching Noah to get people, and that's fine. I've kind of been talked into stretching Noah. I'm not saying it's the wrong thing to do. I'm just not so sure, of course, it's the right thing to do. Like, I know that's wishy-washy, and I'm supposed to give you this hot-ass take, but the hottest take I can get is that I don't think doing what you have to do to get both these guys is a no-doubt-about-it home run if your goal is to win a championship. Like, you're obviously going to be very good, but how long is your window going to be? Are the odds that, like, one of these guys break down? Is it going to be weird cap-wise, and then you don't have draft picks coming in, and then you're not quite, you're a little too soon because you're still in that Golden State thing, and LeBron's getting, you know, old, but he's still around, and maybe the Lakers next year have Kawhi, and, like, you're competing in this window where you're not really going to win, and Boston and Philly are still really, like, are the Knicks rushing into this scenario where they're going to be butting their heads against some immovable objects? I don't know, maybe not, but, like, that's kind of my deep gut feeling, is that this isn't the right thing to do. There's always going to be great players. Maybe Karl Anthony Towns wants to leave in a couple years. Maybe Giannis does. Like, you know what I mean? And that would fit their window better. I just don't love this rush for Butler and Kyrie, even though, of course, it'll make the Knicks a lot better. So that's end rant. I don't know if you have anything to add to that. But that's just something that's been bubbling beneath the surface for me, and I wanted to get off my chest.
Well, all that is fair. I think one thing we do need to consider, too, is, like, if the Knicks have, like, truly championship aspirations, right?
Right.
Who are the players in the league right now who you can say that not only can they get their shot whenever they want, but also have, like, historically have made big shots? There's only, like, a handful of guys, right? Like, who do you want the person taking the last shot? It would be, like, LeBron, Durant, Steph, and then, like, Kyrie. So, like, he's one of, like, 5-6 guys in the NBA who can not only get a shot whenever he wants, but he can get an efficient shot, a good look, an open one, and he'll make it. And, like, that's the sort of player you need in the playoffs and to, like, win a championship, is someone who can get a bucket whenever, and also, like, a good look, too. It's not like he's someone like Porzingis last year, forced on by Jeff Hornacek, who's, like, take mid-range shots. Kyrie doesn't do that. Like, he either gets to the rim or he takes a three-pointer. And he makes it really well, too. And he gets to the line and he does all this stuff.
Yeah.
So that, like, that's the one thing I would just kind of hold back on, like, why I get the nervousness. And also, this is under the big understanding that this is very unlikely in the first place.
I feel very strongly that this is probably not going to happen. But
yeah, like, this is more than likely not going to happen. And that's perfectly fine. It's not the end of the
world.
Yeah.
I mean, strong.
But just, like, he's one of those guys you kind of have to have where you're like,
yeah,
he's the championship guy. He went with LeBron, just those two, and they beat, like, the best team I know I've ever seen. I wasn't watching basketball for, like, you know, the Bulls.
Right.
Whenever they,
I mean, they're right up there. I saw all, like, those Bulls teams. They're right with them. It's,
you know, I'm just saying, like, that 73-1 Warriors team is probably the best team I've ever seen.
Right.
And Kyrie and LeBron beat them.
I mean, you're right. So you're right. I mean, look, strong agree on your evaluation of Kyrie. Something I didn't mention, which is just, like, a small piece of this, but, like, do the Knicks now have to scrap out every win this season? And I guess if they're trading away their pick next year, it doesn't even matter. But, like, scrapping out every win to prove to Kyrie that they're a playoff team and then their pick is worse and blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's it's just one of the many things I was talking about that go into it. But what you say is also true. It just makes me slightly queasy, especially given the Knicks' history. But if they got those two guys, yeah, it would be fun. It would be so insanely fun to root for them, and I would just, you know, keep my fingers crossed that all the injury stuff works out and et cetera, et cetera. I think we should move on to our next topic, ESPN's roundtable on who they would put in the Hall of Fame, who is not in the Hall of Fame currently. Obviously, the Hall of Fame induction ceremony happened a little bit ago. I want to talk about a Nick that was suggested by one of the writers. But before we do that, just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. So like I said, ESPN had this roundtable on who they would put in the Hall of Fame, who is not there already. And one of the writers, Michael Huang, picked Steph Marbury, once a Knick, always a Knick. I want to run down his case quickly and give him his due, and then Drew and I will discuss whether or not we agree with this. So Michael Huang said he's a fringe candidate, first of all, for his high school exploits. You know, he was one of the most highly recruited high school athletes of all time, talking about the NBA. Some fun facts, Spike Lee, I wouldn't say based he got game on his life, but he's on record saying that Marbury was sort of his muse for he got game. Marbury is a central figure in the book The Last Shot by Darcy Frey, and it's about high school basketball players being recruited by the NBA. It's sort of like the book version of Hoop Dreams. The writer goes on to say, in the NBA, Marbury had two All-Star selections and multiple playoff runs as a central figure of the Wolves and the Suns. For him, though, that's like fringe stuff, and it comes down to his post-NBA career in the Chinese Basketball Association, which I thought was interesting. Marbury, as you guys probably know, won three titles with the Beijing Ducks. He is a bona fide legend in the nation's capital, and the writer's key argument was this. This is a quote. With the impact that Hall of Fame contributor Yao Ming had, the world's most populous country has become of the highest priority for the NBA, and Marbury has had a major part in that development. His personality of the vulnerable superstar built lasting rapport with the Chinese audience. In this sense, Marbury's contributions to basketball have been nothing short of global in impact. So he concludes that Marbury deserved to be in the Basketball Hall of Fame, which is not an NBA Hall of Fame, as some people mistakenly think. It's just basketball in general, high school, college, men's and women's, NBA, ABA, all that stuff's in there. So, all that being said, Drew, what do you think about this? Do you think Marbury deserves to be in the Hall of Fame?
Isn't Mitch Richmond in the Hall of Fame?
That's the best response possible. I feel like we should just end the segment now and move on. But I don't know. I'll look him up real quick. Mitch Richmond.
So, this is a discussion that Zach Lowe and Howard Beck had on the Low Post. The concept of like who should get in, who shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
He is in the Hall of Fame
discussion. Mitch Richmond is in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that right there. So basically anyone who's better than Mitch Richmond should be in the Hall of Fame because he shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
But anyway, but no, like they were having a discussion and Howard Beck made a, I thought, like a really good point where he's just like, can you, like the Hall of Fame needs to be like redone and whatever, that sort of thing. And he's like, the players who go in have to be able to like be a part of the story of basketball.
Yes.
And can you tell the story of basketball or a specific era without Stephon Marbury? And that answer is no. Like, he's kind of vital to how the story of basketball just general goes. You know, he's the high school phenom. He's like, he bounced around like this hyper talented person who just never figured it out, can never like get it to click despite putting up great numbers in the NBA, never really won much. And then he was basically ousted in, you know, his early 30s, and he became, you know, the best player in the Chinese Basketball League ever, like most successful and everything.
Seems like
so, like, yeah, he should be in the Hall of Fame, like to help tell the story of basketball.
That makes just a lot of sense. End. You know, that makes a ton of sense to me. You know, you talked about kind of Mitch Richmond as this, I mean, a talented basketball player, but not the kind of person you talk about and you're like, oh, his talent was so immense that he needs to be in the Hall of Fame. So if you look at Steph Marbury in like this vacuum of how good he is, he had incredible ability and skill, but he wouldn't be a Hall of Fame caliber player just based solely on how well he played, especially in the NBA. So the argument, you know, has to be his impact on the game, and I guess it comes down to his impact in China. I'm not there. I don't really have a firsthand account of this. Seems like he's a big deal. I would have put him on the level of a Yao Ming or even like a Kobe Bryant, who it seems like they were all obsessed with before Marbury went over there. But ultimately, you kind of alluded to this, the Hall of Fame doesn't really mean anything on some level. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of the stupidest things in sports. It obviously means a lot to someone who is elected to the Hall of Fame, and I won't take anything away from someone, you know, who like goes up there and cries and it's validation for you know, a long career. Like, that's all fine and valid. But this is sort of, you know, crossing streams for a little bit, crossing sports, the whole like Pete Rose debate. I'm this kind of person who doesn't think a Hall of Fame is for making moral judgments. It really is, like you said, I think that's a great way to put it, telling the story of that sport. So just like I think like Pete Rose should be in the Hall of Fame, I think Steph Marbury probably should. Honestly, just for eating Vaseline and filming it and putting it on the internet. I mean, that's...
Yeah, exactly. Legendary. You know who's not in the Hall of Fame? Chris Webber.
Interesting.
I mean... Let that sit in. Chris Webber, who's vital to the story of basketball, from college to the professionals, being on a team that's ahead of its time for the Sacramento Kings, like the best player on those Kings teams.
Yeah.
And was, you know... some bad refereeing away from probably winning a championship.
Oh, yes.
So, like, he's not in the Hall of Fame.
The timeout. Let's not forget the timeout.
The timeout, exactly. And Mitch Richmond is. I mean, that's... we should just blow up the Hall of Fame, do Bill Simmons' pyramid concept, or just redo it and just be, like, focus on telling the story of the NBA and have, you know, important, like, role players, important meme players, great players, the best of the best. I don't know, something that's, like, more... museum that tells basketball. Like, you go to a museum.
It needs curation.
Like, yeah, exactly.
I mean, I'm sure it is curated on some level, but like.
It probably is. I've never been there. But like, when you go to a museum, like, if you go to like an art museum, like, sure, it's like probably like, I'm assuming it's like the best of some things, but not all the paintings are like, you know, that's, you know, oh my God, it's amazing. Like, it tells a story in a narrative of like specific eras and specific artists depending on what the exhibition is.
Very good point.
And like, you can't. Yeah, like, you can't tell, you know, certain stories about art without certain people, certain artists,
which
certain
is why
whatever it defines
100%.
That's why you got to have Marbury, Chris Webber, and not Ralph Sampson and not Mitch Richmond in the Hall of Fame.
And that's why Herb Williams needs to go in there. There's no Udonis Haslam without Herb Williams. He is the prototypical. We're just gonna keep this guy around. Forever and ever. Amen. And I think it's only fair that Patrick Ewing should be put in there like once a year, maybe once every other year. They should just keep putting him back in there. I don't think that's a
contract. And the idea that you have to like wait and then like you're not a first ballot, but you can like be picked in later. Like, what does that mean?
That's so stupid.
Wait, you're not a Hall of Famer the first time, but you're a Hall of Famer, you know, 5 years down the road. That's stupid.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan has to wait to be a Hall of Famer. Why?
I know,
like, Kevin Garnett has to wait to be a Hall of Famer. Why? They retired. Put him in. They're done playing basketball. Put them in already.
Like, I like that they keep people on ballots because it could give people time to reconsider. But the idea that anyone would be like, yes, you should be in the Hall of Fame, but you're not a first balloter, and then not vote for them that first time around, that is ridiculous. And shame on anyone who thinks that way. I want to move on to another deep off-season topic. Drew, you posed this question in the P&T Slack earlier today when we were brainstorming. It's, does adding a three-point shot actually help Cantor's game and the Knicks moving forward? Is this just kind of like a... I mean, when you ask that question, I'm assuming you're going to say no in some way. But you tell me.
So this was posted in one of the commenters in like a posting article comment section. I don't remember which article it was. It could have been one of mine. So sorry to the user. You'll know who you are.
Shouts to you.
Shouts to whoever you are. You know who you are. I think there's just more of like an interesting concept where what does it mean to pull Cantor away from the rim?
Yeah.
Right? Because what he's best at is, you know, taking shots, you know, 7 feet and getting offensive rebounds and basically clogging the lane. Like, that's what he's best at. Mm-hmm. But we know from just, like, watching games and even, like, larger statistical analysis on, like, offensive rebounds, they don't really mean much. Like, that's why a lot of teams have, like, sacrificed him and focused more on transition defense.
Yep. Strong.
So, like, So you don't really need to focus on offensive rebounds. Like, you basically have to be the best of the best of the best in offensive rebounds to constantly do it. But for Cantor, he doesn't do a lot of other things. Like, he's not, like, passing the ball really well, and he's not defending really well, and those sort of things. So it's like, I'm thinking, so what if we pull him away, and he's taking, like, corner threes, and he opens up, you know, lanes, like, driving lanes for, like, Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway, or pick-and-roll lanes with, like, Porzingis whenever he's healthy, with, like, Frank, something along those lines. Would that help? And I don't know if it really does, because I don't know if he's ever going to be a good three-point shooter to actually add that value to, like, you know, a team. I wanted to just kind of bounce the idea off you and kind of see where it lands. I'm not entirely sure it helps, but theoretically it should. I just don't know if it's actually practical.
I don't believe in his ability to add a three-point shot. I think when you watch him shoot, his motion is labored. He shoots the opposite of, you know, they say someone shoots an easy ball. He shoots a very difficult ball, I think. If they can get him, though, you know, I don't know. Maybe they can get him sort of proficient from the corners. And then I think it helps in some ways, but not in others. I think it definitely helps with their spacing. And one of the low-key things that you and I have talked about a bunch, but a lot of people don't seem to kind of get in the wider basketball universe who may not watch him every game or may not be paying attention to this, is he, like, his effect on spacing is terrible. It's really awful. And I don't know how easy it is for that to show up in whatever numbers you want to look at, but there were so many times where, you know, the Knicks would be running some sort of pick and roll action with Kristaps and he just had nowhere to go. Like, he couldn't roll. So he would pop, or he would roll and sort of put up this weird floater because Cantor was standing there. So, and that goes for anyone who, you know, a lot of the Knicks didn't get to the rim very well last year, and, you know, some of that was their infatuation with the mid-range jump shot because Jeff Hornacek was a dinosaur, but some of it was really bad spacing because of Cantor. So if you can get him out there and they have to respect him even a little bit, you know, he wasn't even pulling people out. There's, you know, there's like second level spacing. I don't know if this is a a term, but you can space by being a mid-range threat, but he wouldn't even do that. He was always crashing the boards. He was always just sort of posting up on the low block. So if you can get him out to the three-point line and they can respect that a little bit, that's good. You know, people are worried about this affecting his offensive rebounding. That I don't care about at all, as you just said. But I don't think that now if he's standing on the three-point line, it's going to help him any with getting back in transition defense. I think he's still going to be a poor transition defender. So I really think it's going to be something that, you know, it'll be good for their spacing. And hell, if he knocks some down, obviously that'll help with the overall team efficiency a little bit. They need some more threes. So I think it's worth trying, especially because, I mean, what do you have to lose? You could question, you know, the meta narrative here of, do we really want to be winning games this season? But if you're operating under the assumption that you've hired this head coach to maximize everyone and to show players that he cares about them and to show players that he's smart and that he can organize good basketball, you know, I think it's a good idea to have Cantor try to shoot three-pointers. You see how he goes. You don't just keep doing it the whole season, I think. I think it's okay to abandon that experiment at some point. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you want to start for a couple months, see if he can heave some threes? I don't know. I'm all for it.
Yeah, I just think Cantor, just only to also like extend his career, he needs to add another part to his offense that's not just offensive rebounding and posting up. Like, he can be like really good at posting up, and he has to do something else, whether it's like passing, actually rim running, to actually make to help with spacing and being more of like a threat in the restricted area that's not just post ups or
help defense.
He does. Yeah, help defense. Well, the defense is kind of general. I'm just thinking, like, offensively, like, what other facet can he add to his offensive game that's not just tapping the ball back up? Like, could he hit, like, those, you know, like those LaMarcus Aldridge, like, mid-range shots by, like, the free throw line? That would help with spacing just by doing that.
I mean, he shoots well from the free throw line, doesn't he? Did I imagine that?
No, I think he's a really good free throw shooter. So naturally, you would assume, like, he can handle, like, a 17-foot jump shot from, you know, the high post.
He's been like high 70s throughout his career, although last year he shot 85% from the stripe. So maybe that's an outlier. Before that, his highest was 795, so that's not great. So I don't know.
I mean, for a big man, that's not terrible shooting under 80% from the free throw line.
And he came in super young, so he's, you know, he's still, he's, that was his 25 season, so he could be like upping his shooting percentage still. That's not like out of the question. Like I said, I don't have hope for him developing his 3-point shot, but I think it's worth investigating, like you said, especially for his career longevity. I hope to not see him on the Knicks after this upcoming season. I wish him the best of luck, though, and I hope he develops some additional skills just like you do. I want to talk about your, I don't know if this is controversial, but your take that Phil Jackson saved the Knicks. And I also want to talk about some data unlocked on Knicks itself on how many times each guest has appeared. Drew's prepared something very special for us. But before we do that, just want to remind you, I almost got through that cleanly. Just want to remind you that you are listening to Locked On Knicks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. All right, Drew, it's time for you to hit us with your take on how Phil Jackson saved the Knicks. I'm not saying I agree or disagree yet, but I'm just setting you up to, you know, tell us what you want to tell us.
So we all know Phil Jackson, and we all, for the most part, hate Phil Jackson. He he sleeps through prospect, workouts.
Facts.
He sleeps through them. He enjoys calling out his players.
Facts.
In the media for no reason other than to motivate them, but that doesn't work.
Facts.
And he just likes to shit stir.
Facts, facts, facts.
And he was really insistent on, you know, having the Knicks run the triangle, but not have him or one of his guys do it, except for, you know, they had Derek Fisher, but then Fisher didn't work
out. I wish he could have just shut the fuck up about it. The worst part about it was just him talking about it. As we all know, Golden State runs many facets of the triangle offense.
Well, here's the thing. Like, the triangle would have worked if...
Sure.
One, they actually, like, truly committed to it. Him actually coaching it and having players wanting to do it. Like, I don't think the triangle is actually outdated, like everyone says.
Yes.
It is. Like, you can't adjust it. The problem is you have Jeff Hornacek teaching it. And, you know, the players are like, we don't want to do it anymore. So, like, if the players don't want to do it anymore, then don't do it. Like,
you
it's
had,
like one of those. Like,
you had Grandpa Shitface come in and be like, fuck all you young bitches. I'm going to come in here and tell you how I walked uphill both ways to school. You dirty little
sort of
fucks.
Like,
yeah, so people don't like
it. You can't just be like, you have to run it, and everyone's like, no, and then you go, no, you have to. Like, that, it's going to fail.
I mean, I agree with all this, but we can't rehash this again,
anyway,
or I will literally kill myself. So continue.
So anyway,
that's all right. That's fine.
So basically, he comes in as the savior. So Dolan does what Dolan always does and hires, you know, the glitzy big name.
Yes.
You know, the former Knick, the champion, the Zen master, who won... I don't know how many championships. Did he have like 15,
Big
13
Chief
total?
Triangle. I think it was 69,420 total.
Yeah, something like that. He has all the titles with Jordan and Kobe, and he's the whisperer of like players and all that.
Uh-huh.
All that mumbo jumbo. The problem is, just like what Dolan does with big names, Phil Jackson's never run a front office. He has no idea how to do this stuff.
That's true.
However, this was the first time Dolan's ever like, you know what, Phil? You go and do it. I'll just cut the checks. And he stayed out for the most part.
Yep.
So Phil in that way really started moving the ball of Dolan staying out of things.
He got him to admit live on a taped interview for the whole world to see that he doesn't really know much about basketball. So that was big.
So exactly. So right. So that's like a huge step in the
He's on the record now. Yep. Can't go back from that. You can't be like, oh yeah, I do. And I'm making decisions now. I learned in the past year.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work that way.
You're out now. You're out.
Phil brought in the scout whisperer. I'm forgetting his name at the moment.
Clarence Gaines?
Yeah, Clarence Gaines. He brought him in. And Clarence
he
Gaines
of the
like,
dashiki wearing fame.
Exactly.
A great look, by the way.
He does the great interview questions where he asks weird questions to like throw people off.
Yes.
Great tactic, by the way. Anyone who does interviews, that's how you throw people off. And if they can handle it, you know you have a keeper right
like,
there.
Do you think frogs should be able to marry goats? It's like, what?
Yeah, and if someone really responds thoughtfully and off the cuff, you got to hire that person.
Exactly. That's how I got my job. That exact question. David Locke called me up. He was like, James, is it true that your mother's a prostitute? And I was like, first of all, fuck you. Second of all, I'm calling Deadspin. Third of all, hire me or I'm going to blackmail you. And he was like, you got it. That was thoughtful.
He's like, nailed it.
Yep. That's all he wanted to say. He's like, yes, this was an obnoxious question. And you called me out and that's what I wanted.
See, good job, David. You hired the right person.
Yes.
But so like Phil hired the right person, and who does and what does Gaines say? You got to take this, you know, skinny Latvian kid. Trust me. And what does Phil do? He trusts him, and he picks the skinny Latvian kid because Sam Hinkie didn't want to pick him for whatever reason. He wanted to pick, you know, Jahlil Okafor. Look how that turned out for the Sixers.
True.
And we see how great Porzingis is. He's legitimately, he's a legit two-way star if he's healthy.
Yes.
Like, that's, you know, it's the big healthy, and if he recovers from his knee, he's a legitimate two-way player.
The rarest breed.
Exactly. Like, someone you can actually build a team around. Will it be a championship team, or will it be, like, a playoff team? Probably more of, like, a successful playoff team, depending on who you fill around. But, like, someone you can, like, construct something with.
Yes.
That was huge, and that's what filled in. And that's probably more important than almost anything else that, like, a team does, is, like, nail a high lottery pick. And Phil wasn't really trading first-round picks either.
Yep.
Like, during his tenure, he's like, I'm not trading first-round picks. It's not going to happen. And he wanted first-round picks. Even when he said he wants to trade Porzingis, you know, and he was like, to the Celtics, he was like, I want, you know, 25 first-round picks. I want Jason Tatum. I want, what's his name? Brown? I'm blanking on the first name. But, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Jaylen Brown. And he's like, I want everyone. And, you know, and what's his name? Danny Ainge is like, no, that's my job to exploit teams. You don't exploit me. It's not happening. So, in that case, like, you kind of see the shift where, like, no first-round picks. They got the franchise player. You know, there's something here. And then Phil imploded, like we kind of eventually saw. And he was, like, melting down. He's calling out Carmelo. Even though what he said about Carmelo was true, you still can't say that publicly when you're just, like, the president of basketball operations. Like, it doesn't work that way anymore, especially with the 24-hour news cycle. Like, he probably could have got away with it as the coach back in, like, the 90s.
Totally agree.
Like, he can't do it now in, you know, 2017 with the media, especially for someone who's beloved in, like, the player circle, like Carmelo. Not going to work. So he gets ousted. And Dolan screwed up the firing anyway, because you don't fire someone after the draft. But anyway, he gets him fired. He brings back in Mills. He's like, please, please don't be Phil Jackson. And Steve Mills hasn't been Phil Jackson. So that right there. So yeah. Phil saved the Knicks by burning everything and screwing everything up.
He definitely
put the Knicks in a position to be successful because Mills learned from his, you know, awful tenure when he was first the president of basketball operations.
Right.
Hired a smart GM. The GM, you know, Perry seems to know what he's doing. Kevin Knox looks good. Mitchell Robinson slipped and they picked him up. Frank is a Phil pick, but Frank seems like the better fit to, like, he's like the Swiss Army knife. You can just throw him anywhere.
I love Frank more and more. The more I think about, you know, I was obsessed with wanting him to be a point guard, but the more I just think about his versatility, it's just like, this is great. We could draft anyone. Frank can just fit anywhere.
Right? So it's pretty much like, we'll bring in Kyrie. Great. Frank could fit with him. Wonderful. Bring in Kevin Durant. Great. Frank could fit with him. Bring in LeBron. Frank could fit with him. Like, it just, his versatility is going to be so vital moving forward because he can play like multiple positions on offense and defense.
It's true.
That's good to really just like plug in holes, and we don't really know what it's all. Anyway,
I got a little side. I heard Frank, and I was like, the hard eyes came out of my head like a cartoon.
Yeah, so basically, Phil drafted, for what we appear, like, nailed his first two round picks. I know Frank's still up in the air, but like nailed his only two picks because previous regimes decided to trade them away for, you know, Carmelo Anthony. You know, Donnie Walsh and his nonsense.
But
Phil saved the Knicks by picking players and then forcing James Dolan to not be James Dolan.
So here's the thing with Phil. I do agree with you. He's sort of like, but not fully, maybe. I don't know, because it was possible for the Knicks to just sign someone who would have done the good things that Phil did and not the bad things. And obviously, Noah is a horrible contract, but in my opinion, re-signing Melo was the original sin. I know a lot of people will disagree with this, but I thought if anyone had the cachet to not bring Melo back, it would have been Phil Jackson. I think he had the hubris to think that he could bend Melo to his will, and that turned out not to be true, at least in the GM role. That to me was, I think, a huge mistake. I know a lot of people won't agree with that, and they'll say it's all these other moves or whatever. And that's fair. I don't say that my argument is unimpeachable, But I have like some pretty big problems with Phil, but the Knicks just needed to stop hemorrhaging first-round picks, like you said. Kristaps is like the home run to end home runs. I love the Frank pick. I see Phil as almost this sort of... He's this evolutionary step toward goodness. I agree with you also that he got James Dolan to, you know, admit that he doesn't know anything about basketball. He got James Dolan to realize he probably doesn't need a big-name savior. So these are all important steps. Phil is like the ape that ate mushrooms and realized there was more out there than just being an ape, and like kind of became a little bit of a human, but wasn't a human yet. He had to like give mushrooms to his girlfriend. They had a baby. The baby ate mushrooms. Then the baby's like, I'm basically a human now. That's how evolution works, right? You know, like Phil is this, maybe in respect to, because he had to pull Dolan out of the primordial ooze, he's almost like this necessary, not perfect intermediary between atrociousness and excellence. And I think that's as far as I'm willing to go. And I don't know if that makes him a savior, but certainly you can look at him very easily as a key building block on the road to respectability, even though he had like these huge glaring deficiencies.
Oh yeah, there's still tons of issues with Phil. We don't need to like go into them. Like there's still tons and tons of issues. I'm just saying like his rise and fall was, well, he didn't really rise, but like his disgrace out of basketball, because now he's seen as like an old kook. But like him being that person allowed the Knicks to do like, all right, we got to keep it low key and, you know, be nice with the media and make smart decisions. And that's what they've done. So,
I like,
you know,
this.
If this and if they continue, I mean, it's because of Phil.
I like this take.
That's my take, that Phil Jackson actually saved.
I enjoy it. Let's close out the episode with, I hope it's a feel-good segment, but we'll see. Drew, you know, you guys, if you've listened before, if you haven't, Drew's big on data, or data, depending on how... are you a data guy or a data guy, Drew?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Because I think data is, like, correct, but I think the concept of correctness is annoying. It's what people want to say. There's no.
I'm pretty sure I say data, like I just did right now, but I think if I'm reading it, I'll say data in my head. I don't know.
It's my default is data.
Yeah, my default is data. I know for me, for like route and route, I'll say like route 80 for like a highway.
Yeah.
But I'll be like, did you map out the route?
Yeah, it is. It's definitely like route 66. But what's the route? Like, what's the correct route to a championship or something?
Yeah, like no one says route 66, and if they do, they're monsters.
There's definitely some monsters who do that. But so, like we're saying, Drew is a data/data guy, and we have a fun little game going on Locked On Knicks with the guests and how many appearances they've made, who's had the most appearances, etc. Because we've had a lot of repeat appearances from some of our upper echelon guests. So I'm curious what your findings are, Drew. What'd you figure out?
Yeah, so not to get Alex's panties in a bunch, because I know he would be very angry if we didn't count his, you know, four-part Rick and Morty series and made it one against him.
That's fair. As the host of this podcast, it should be four. You guys can bitch and moan about it. It should be four. It was huge
for
me.
I counted it as four. Okay. I want to count it against him because he's very, you know, he's very sensitive about being the top person.
He is a very sensitive boy. That's part of why.
So I just wanted to let people know that. But Alex Wolf is the top guy.
Okay.
For the James Marcita era of Locked On Knicks with, drumroll please, you're going to add this in post, obviously, 17 appearances.
Woo! There's a marching band in my apartment. You may be able to hear it. Confetti's going off.
Yeah, we can add all this in post, though, too, right?
Not just your sound effects. What my sound effects? There's actually a marching band here.
No. Okay.
Yeah, you don't hear
it. All right, we'll cut what I'm just saying in post as well, then. That's fine.
We'll do that. We'll cut this whole thing in post. It'll be great.
Yeah, we just do the intro and the outro. There's nothing in the middle.
That's efficiency.
Exactly. So, the second person on the list, do you want to do another drum roll, or should we just...
No, let's just do it. I'm exhausted.
Right. Second person is Ashwin with 13 appearances.
He would have that. It's an evil number. Let's face it, he's an evil person. I love him. You know, evil people are fun, they're entertaining, like Tony Soprano. But, you know, 13. Yeah,
he,
that makes a lot of sense. He's
cursed. Also gained like he gained a lot of momentum later as the season went on. Like, there's a lot of thing, you know, without piling up.
Yeah.
And then third is me.
Okay.
Scooter Toots.
Scooter Toots.
This will be the eighth appearance.
Okay.
On Locked On Knicks. So that's the top three. Then there's a number of people with like four. That's going to be editor-in-chief of Post Oxytocin, Joe Flynn. Shout out to Joe.
What up, Joe?
And then also tied with him is Matt Miranda, a.k.a. Matt Squared.
Matty, we're having him on next week.
Oh, good. We need to have him back on. You know, he was like the person who was really piling up stuff, those four in the beginning of the Marcita era, and then it just cut out.
Miranda is a busy guy.
He really is.
It's not for lack of – he's been like moving and changing jobs and families. And it's like it's – but we miss him dearly, and he misses us. He has relayed this message to us, and we're having him back next week. So looking forward to that.
And then also with four is our good friend, Stingy.
Yes, John Shulman.
Yes. And he has four. And those are like the top four. And then there's like twos and ones.
Yeah.
Some, you know, you're, apparently some guy named Brad that you know has two.
One of my best friends in the entire world. Shouts to Brad. We gotta have Brad back. It's been way too long. What am I doing?
What's great is when you go through the iTunes section. It just says, like, with Brad.
Because he's one of these people. He has a real job, and he doesn't always want his, you know, name attached to stuff. So we don't use his last name.
Completely understandable. It's just really funny when you see, like, podcasts. You'll see, like, you know, like, you go, like, the low post, you'll see stuff like Howard Backer and, you know, like, Steve Kerr and all that. And it's, like, Locked On Knicks has Brad.
Well, it's funny, because it's, like, with Frank Ntilikina. And now this week, with Brad.
Yeah, like, Brad has more appearances than Frank. Which I love that as a concept. So
well deserved. So, you know, Frank, so I love him on the court, but you know, not my favorite guy to talk to. My favorite guy in the world, but you know, come on. Let's be honest.
So and then most of it's like twos and ones after that. Like Ian Begley showed up twice.
Oh, we gotta get him back. Yeah.
Good and stuff. Mike Vorkunov showed up twice. Yeah. Shout out to Mike if he's listening.
What up, Mike?
I'm always free for a podcast appearance.
Drew, come on.
Just throwing it out there.
This is disgusting. You disgust me. Keep going. Anyone else?
Former host Jared Dubin appeared twice.
Yes, he did. All right.
And then, you know, it kind of mixed in here and there, a couple ones and stuff. But, you know, the main group, there's like, you know, there's three of us, and then there's like a smaller group. And then, everything, you know, twos and ones for randomness. Yeah. But, okay. Yeah. Alex is the champion at 17. So, it's okay, Alex. I counted your four. Everything will be fine.
If you didn't, he would only be... Beep, boop, 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 carry the one, pour a beaker of fluid into another beaker of fluid. There's an explosion. He'd only be one above Schwinn if it counted as one episode. Right? Is that right?
Well, there's also like a couple like multi-part things. So, like, I didn't know I was on a multi-part one.
Yeah.
So if we did that subtraction, Ashwin's been on a couple multi-part ones. Yeah. So, like... If we did shrink them, I think it would be a lot closer for the top three than we realize. But, you know, we spread them out. Each episode is an episode, so therefore it's an individual appearance. I can't, you know, say that. Like, you know, we're also recording, in case anyone knows, a podcast, you know, 4 months from now, too, at this very moment. So stay tuned for that.
Woo! Okay. I don't know what that means.
That's all I got.
What the hell is that? What did that mean, Drew? We're recording a podcast 4 months from now.
Mm-hmm. We're time travelers. Time's a flat circle.
Oh, my God. Well, this is going to be listened to people millennia in the future. So, on that point, I agree with you. Yeah, time's a...
Oh, yeah.
Time's a social construct. Don't believe in it. I personally am unstuck in time, but that's just me.
Can you imagine people coming back, like, 100 years from now? They're like, hey, how are the Knicks before the 2018 season? Yeah. And they're listening to this 100 years from now. They're like, what is happening?
Well, I gotta. So, shouts to listener Alex from Ireland. He found the show like a month ago and really liked it and went back and listened to every episode of my run in reverse order. So,
that's gotta be an experience.
I'm like, I don't know if no one loves me. Like, that's more than my mom would ever do. So, just shouts to you, Alex. I gotta, like,
yeah,
I think we have to get married. I think is how that works. Right? Sorry to my fiance, but Alex listened to all the episodes like in like 3 weeks in reverse order. So that is common law that we're married now. So
That's how it is in Europe.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. They've got, they're much more progressive over there. So these kind of things just take care of themselves, you know. Drew, it's been just a lovely time talking with you, as it always is, of course. We, you know, we talk a lot of smack on this, but you're my boy, Drew. I'm pounding my chest with my fist.
You're my boy, Drew. you're my boy, Blue. Yeah,
it's to the tune. Yes, it is to the tune of "You're My Boy, Blue." So
that's an old school reference for anyone who's like younger than what 16.
Listening to the old school is probably the best stupid movie of all time. Can I go there? I don't know. Is Caddyshack a stupid movie? That's a stupid movie.
There's a lot of stupid movies. This sounds like Die Hard. Like Die Hard's a stupid
movie. Yeah, this is way too broad and intense a category for me to just throw out there right now. So I apologize. We were wrapping up. Drew, where can the people find you online? Anything you want to plug? All that good stuff. Bring us home.
Yes. So you could find me at ScooterToots on Twitter. I currently have a poll out asking, would 5 Joe Ingles go undefeated? Scoot. So please vote for that.
People don't know this. Kanye was actually going, Scoot. Toot! In that song that he put out when he was
going. Man, that would be, I wish, and everyone started following me.
Scoot toots!
nothing I need more than to, you know, boost my ego by having random people follow me. That's what I need in life.
You know what's the best, Drew? Kanye. You know what's actually the best? Is starting a joke account and then getting around 30,000 followers and then sinking into a deep depression because you realize it doesn't mean anything. You're no different off from when you were before you got 30,000 followers. And life is just a slow march toward death.
And it's not you.
Eat at Arby's. You know what I mean?
It's your persona. Like, it's not even you.
Yes. It's not even you. It's like a joke that you kind of like, but everyone loves. You're like, oh, yeah. It's not the real me. I contain multitudes. You know?
I'm a complicated person. I have other interests.
I like the cinema, goddammit. I want to see There Will Be Blood with an orchestral backing. I am deep. It was fantastic, by the way. For those of you who follow on Twitter, I asked for restaurant recommendations near Lincoln Center. It was so good. It was so good. My favorite part of an orchestral performance is just when they're tuning up in the beginning. And they go...
And it's just awful. It's great.
But it's so beautiful. It's this beautiful cacophony.
Yeah, because you're like, oh, these people are terrible. Like, I could do the violin like that. And then they start playing it, and you're like, oh, no, I can't do anything like this.
Yeah, it's like drunken master fighting or something, right? I think I like that analogy. Or a rope-a-dope. They make you think they don't know. You're like, what is this garbage? And then it's... That's the violin concerto from There Will Be Blood. Anyway, you didn't finish plugging stuff, right? Your Scooter Toots.
Oh, yeah, so I'm Scooter Toots. There's a poll that's out for 24 hours about Joe Ingles, so vote for Joe. Something about Joe Ingles.
Oh, yes, yep.
I have an article on Posting and Toasting about some stat I found. So
some data/data shit.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And then I just like created a some sort of like Tableau dashboard where you can, like, it's interactive, so you can like search things about the Knicks shot quality.
Ooh, I like this. I haven't read it yet, but I've heard good things.
Yeah, so check that. I already screwed up the title, so I had to edit the article and all the stuff in it, which was kind of embarrassing because I'm like, I don't even know what happened. Even the guy who I stole the article from, yeah, I credit him. I was like, he inspired me. He was like, yeah, it was about the messenger. You screwed up the title.
Drew, you're ruining the veneer of expertise that I have been carefully crafting on this show for months. I'm going to put you on the spot now. You've got to plug something that you have nothing to do with. Anything
that I have nothing to do with. Yeah. I was actually about to plug my master's thesis on Star Trek, but I'll save that for a different.
That's appearance. Not a real thing. Is that a real thing?
Yeah. So I actually.
All right. This will do. Keep going. Yeah. This will do.
Yeah. So my tenure in graduate school, I wrote a thesis on the Prime Directive from Star Trek, the original series.
Oh my god. Right.
So I analyzed all the Prime Directive episodes. And try to determine, does Star Trek actually have a reasonable Prime Directive, and could that actually apply to real life?
Are you just reading the script for PCU? Isn't this a subplot of PCU? Have you ever seen that movie, that feature film?
What's PCU?
Here we go. It's a film about a college called PCU, And, like, the joke is that there's a bunch of, like, PC, you know, there's protesting and all this stuff. And there's a frat house, and Jeremy Piven is in it, and he's bald, because this is before Jeremy Piven got plugs. That's how old it is.
I don't watch stuff with Jeremy Piven in it.
You're not the world's number one Entourage fan? That's what I've heard. I've heard you said Entourage is better than The Sopranos.
Maybe I have, but I'm going to be on the record formally right now, and I'm going to say that is not the case.
Did you spend money to get a degree in the Star Trek thesis?
Yeah, I spent money to go to grad school, and I decided to write on this. So, yeah. Mm.
Drew, that might make you my favorite guest of all time. I don't know. Alex and Sean got to watch out, I think.
Yeah, so if you guys, if anyone who's listening actually wants to read it, just message me on Twitter. I'll just send you the links.
Wow, that is, I'm floored.
Or if you go to Loyola Chicago, shout out to the Ramblers. You can go to their library and it's somewhere in their stacks too. It's published somewhere there.
Wait, weren't they were they that miracle Final Four team?
Yes, or Final Eight, something like that. I was very excited. I was talking so much shit, even though I just went to grad school there. I was Loyola's the best.
Please. You spent actual money to write a thesis on Star Trek at this place. You get to root all the way.
Well, for that I was originally not going to do a thesis, and I was thinking, because my plan was eventually to go into like a PhD program,
uh-huh.
and I wanted to like do like political philosophy with like pop culture tie-ins. Huh. So I'm thinking, oh, this would be great to do, and then I realized, yeah, this was a terrible idea, and I'm definitely not.
What did you want to do to this? Yeah. What did you want to do with this? This is now a Marc Maron what the fuck episode, but that's fine.
Yeah, so the goal was...
Drew, tell me about your family. Do you love your parents? No, I do.
Do you have a dark past with drugs?
I do want to hear more about this, though. Continue. We can wrap up in a minute.
Yeah, so basically what it is like after undergrad, I'm like, you know what? I want to figure out, I think I want to do a PhD program, but I first want to take, you know, get my master's degree and kind of figure out what I want to do. Is grad school the right thing for me?
Okay.
So after some issues with doing St. John's University, shout out to New York City, it wasn't really working out there, so I just basically started over and went to Loyola, was doing, just focusing on political philosophy. So I did a lot of, grad school, there's just tons and tons of reading. So all I was doing was, like, reading political philosophy.
Did you want to be a professor?
Yeah, the goal was eventually become a professor and just do research on being able to make... academia more accessible to
the public. That's a problem.
When you read a lot of these like research like stuff, it's written for other people in academia. It's very self-serving.
Yes.
And I'm like, I don't really want to do that. I want to do things like, hey, if we're going to talk about political philosophy, I want to do it through pop culture. So something like, hey, we're going to talk about like the Prime Directive and talk about the philosophy behind it and humanism and whatnot. So that was like kind of like the goal is like, hey, there's something you can understand by watching a Star Trek episode that is inherently, you know, philosophical and political.
You should go back to doing that. It's better for mankind.
No, I think what's better for mankind is reading my data articles on postingandtoasting.
Yes.com. Thanks, Drew.
Thanks, James.
All right, that's it. Thank you guys so much for listening to Locked On Knicks. If you have a moment, rate us on iTunes. The more 5-star ratings we have, the better. Subscribe to the show if you have not already. The more subscriptions we have, the better. Tell your friends about the sensation that is Locked On Knicks. The more we grow, the better. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Knicks or NBA Injury Report. That's just for you. At Locked On Knicks, we have bonus takes, we have general camaraderie, we talk to each other, we shoot ideas back and forth that you may not get on the podcast. It's fun. Be chill to each other. It's going to be nice, right? The golden rule, spay and neuter your pets. If it's yellow, let it mellow. If it's brown, flush it down. Always salt the pasta water. Take that. For data, Biggie's better than Pac. Peace!